be blue, 'cause I can't see you. Richie, I love you.
Hello, this is Richie Wexler. Welcome to Vintage Annals Archive Outsider Podcast. Very happy today to be speaking with Brian Greenenwald. Brian is the nephew of Patrick D. Pagnano, a photographer that worked for over 30, 40 years. I first learned about Pat's work through a project he did. It's Empire Roller Disco. He had was on an assignment. He did commercial work for this roller skating rink in the 80s. And I don't know what happened that night, but he just created magic. It looks like the images are amazing. If you haven't seen them, check them out. Just look up Empire Roller Disco, Patrick D. Pagnano, or there's also a book they put out about a year ago, which is amazing, and I highly recommend it. Beautiful book and great images. So I reached out to try to interview him, and unfortunately he had passed in 2018. We do work on like legacy projects. One of the, you know, this podcast is part of a bigger project. We have the Instagram page, and we do legacy projects. One of the ones I'm most proud of is I work on Arlene Gottfried's legacy page. Arlene Gottfried was Gilbert Gottfried's sister and amazing photographer, my hero photographer. I spent 8 years trying to see if I could connect with her to do promotion because there was nothing happening on her, you know, there's no one to tag whenever I would. And I got friendly with her sister, Karen Gottfried, who's a very lovely person. And I have to thank Meryl Meisler for connecting me, another amazing photographer. So, you know, I've been working on that. And then since I was doing that project, I was looking for other people, you know, who can't promote their own work, who I believe in. And so I reached out to, you know, the family, and I got connected with Brian. And Brian does not really know about these worlds, but Brian has been working his ass off to honor his uncle, which is very admirable. And he's been great to talk to just about the work and his uncle. And please check out their website. I'm looking at it right now, patrickdpagnano.com. They're selling his Shot on the Street, his first book, his only book. And then the other book is The Empire Skating, which Roller Disco, which is amazing. So enjoy. I'm a photographer myself. Please check out my own page, Rich Wexler Photography or Photographer. Because I do photography and mostly documentary, I'd like to, you know, highlight about once a month another photographer because it's a more organic conversation. And Patrick, please, and check out Patrick's work, man. I you know, I only really knew about the one series, and he's got so much amazing work, and we're hoping to, you know, keep posting around it and connecting you with Pat's page. And I would also like to ask you real quick to follow them on Instagram. I think it's just under Patrick Pagnano. I will be posting it in this episode. So thank you. And we are in episode 62. Woo, man, I'm tired just saying that. All right, take care. Bye-bye. So Patrick was your uncle. For those who know Patrick Pagnano, I'm just going to read a little blurb. Italian American photographer, devotion to family, honor, personal responsibility, working class parents, and really maintain a lifelong allegiance with documenting like underprivileged communities, like people, you know, who shared common struggle. And you know, I don't know, the more I've learned about your uncle, he just seemed like he was really good people, very kind, really just tried to like take care of people by making sure they were part of a history of in photos, more or less.
Pat had an older brother, Nikki, and a younger sister, my mom, Janice. And he moved to New York with his wife, Kari, in 1974, so long before I was born. And we saw them every year. It was either in the summer we saw them in the Catskill Mountains, we would go and visit them, or they would come back to Chicago for Christmas and see us and my grandparents. Pat and Kari never had children, so I was the only nephew. I have an older sister, and then Nikki had two daughters also. And so for whatever reason, Uncle Pat and I just kind of, we connected for whatever reason.
He kind of saw you as more as a son. in a way than an uncle?
Yeah, I mean, we were just we got to be close. I mean, for whatever reason, we get. I think, you know, nobody's got a favorite niece or nephew, but I think I was his favorite. Don't tell anyone. You know?
Yeah, right.
That was kind of how my connection with Pat, and then unfortunately, as you know, he passed away in 2018, October 7th of 2018. We saw him the summer before that, June or July of 2018. And he and I talked a lot about his archive. We talked a lot about, you know, basically I told him, I said, look, eventually I'm going to take this over because you have no children. And, you know, it's a burden on my aunt to do all of that. And, you know, plus her own work and taking, she's got an elderly mother that she takes care of. So, and I told him, I said, you need to tell me what you want done with this stuff. And he said, oh, you know, we got plenty of time. Don't worry about it. You know, I'll write it all down for you. Well, you know, unfortunately, he didn't have as much time as he thought. And there really weren't all that many clear instructions on what he wanted done with it. So now I'm kind of flying by the seat of my pants and trying to figure out how to get his work out to the world. So that's kind of where we're at right now.
And did he know he was sick when you talked about his legacy or not so much?
He was sick, but you know, it wasn't anything that he thought he was going to die from. So he actually, it ended up being a heart problem that ended up being his cause of death, but he had some neurological issues before that he was dealing with.
I know the last time we talked, remember you told me a story about like some moment where you had with like memories of fishing with him, if I'm not mistaken, unless I made that up.
We did a lot of stuff together. I mean, whenever we'd go up to the Catskills, I mean, some of my fondest memories are being in the Catskill Mountains with him and going up there riding in the tractor, or they've got 18 acres in the mountains. So we'd go up there, we'd hike, and it's beautiful country up there. It's one of my, you know, core childhood memories is going up to the Catskills.
I'm curious in terms of your understanding of him as an activist. You know, I know like last time we talked, you'd only, you know, you hadn't seen a lot of this stuff. I'm not sure how much you've seen. So I guess, maybe to answer that question or just to expand, what have you learned about Pat from just looking through all this stuff? Like, what have you come to understand? What are some, you know, I don't know, what have you gotten out of it? What are some of your, you know, some of the, are there any like, I think some things that were surprises, some things that were just like, wow, like he's a photographer, but it's like going through somebody's actual photos. I mean, it's weird to put it like that, but you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I mean, it's to say overwhelming would be putting it lightly sometimes.
How much work is there? Yeah.
My family and I, my wife and my two kids and I and my parents went to the Catskills at the end of July. And Pat and his wife Kari have a large barn there. And I say barn, but it's a full building. It's not like a barn that had all of his archives. And when I looked last, so we brought almost everything back with us. And when I looked last, there's multiple series. So there's Italy black and whites, there's Italy color, there's a ton of New York street photography. You know, I think there's probably 4,000 contact sheets of New York street photography alone. So 100,000 images, give or take. You know, and the thing that is frustrating for me is when Pat would come to Chicago or when we'd be in New York, he would go off the same roll of film that he'd been using for street photography. So if I want to try to find photos of my family, I have to go through every contact sheet in every box and then go see if I can find the negative, which is a whole nother issue. But there's a storage unit full of Pat's work right now, you know, and that's just the contact sheets, the negatives and some slides. He also printed a lot, either test prints or digital prints and final prints. There's some vintage silver prints. I mean, there's probably 1,000-1,500 prints alone, you know, of varying sizes that I've come across too. So it's a lot. I love it in a weird way. I enjoy, you know, as you've probably noticed on Instagram, I go on there almost every day and try to post something. I mean, there's so much that, and I, you know, I put on there, I'm like, it would take me years to go through everything, you know. So if I post a picture or two every day or two, you know, I enjoy it. And it's fun for me. I love looking through and seeing what he was photographing, going through the different series. And it's amazing. And it's almost sad that more of it hasn't come to light yet.
Well, I know, I just want to go over some of the projects real quick, 'cause I want to just give people a little background. Like, You said the Italy project. I know he did a lot of stuff in terms of the Rod and Custom show, car stuff. I know he. We'll get into it in a second, but I know you know the Empire roller skating stuff. I know he went with Dan Rather to Cuba. You know, I know he worked like CBS for 20 years. You know, he's most known through the both his books, Shot in the Street and the Empire book. But I feel like people don't really understand how much more is out there.
Right. So, you know, he did have a number of series. So he had his early Chicago from when he was a student at Columbia.
Okay.
That is absolutely gorgeous. There's so much beautiful black and white photos that he took. He did a series with Hoxie Circus. So that is some really cool stuff too.
What years are you talking about? What year is that around, dude?
I believe the Hoxie Circus would have been about 1971-ish. He also did the Hot Rod and Custom Show. This was the Chicago Auto Show at McCormick Center. That was 1971. He did Europe and Italy. So those were, I believe, the 1972, 1973 era-ish. All of his New York Black and White, New York Color. And then his commercial work. So Pat's passion was street photography. Every day he would go out. He had a studio in New York, and on his walk to his studio, he had his camera, and that's where he took a lot of his photos. So his passion was street photography. However, his commercial work, a lot of it was with CBS. He did a lot with David Letterman, a lot with Dan Rather. You know, his main, I think, most prized assignment was going to Cuba with Dan Rather to interview Fidel Castro. And again, amazing pictures of, you know, Fidel Castro and everything related to that trip. But, you know, he did a lot of commercial work. He did a lot of stuff for Forbes magazine, and that's where Empire Roller Disco came in. Was that was an assignment for Forbes magazine in February of 1980, and it never got used. And so it just sat.
So it was never published for the magazine either.
Right. It was never published for the magazine. And so the photos just sat, and eventually, trying to remember which was first. I believe it was Brick in Brooklyn. Brick Gallery had a show that featured Empire Roller Disco prints. And then Ben Ruby Gallery, and I believe it's also in Brooklyn, did a show of the Empire Roller Disco prints. And that's where Anthology Editions saw them and approached my aunt in order to make a book. And so that's how that all came about.
It's weird. I think because of how well he represents the people there, I assume that project was, you know, shot over months, because it's just whatever he did, he just got to the core of everybody there, that I just felt like he must spend so much time. But how much did he actually shoot at that?
One night.
But I mean, how many rolls of film did he go through, if you know? But I'm curious how many prints or images might have been shot for that project.
Let me hang on one second. I'm not 100% sure, but I bet I can. I have all of those images here. So if you give me one second, I can see if they're. But yeah, that was a one night project. He made basically his lighting setup to be able to use there. And I would say so. Maybe 150 photos total is what he ended up putting on contact sheets. Give or take. And like I said, those have been extremely popular. They're the Art and Embassies program. Has them hanging in the ambassador's residence in Poland. That's cool. You know, they've been sold a couple of times as prints. Obviously, they became the book. They've been featured in a couple of different places. There was a dance book about modern dance that they were featured in. So that series has been very popular.
What's your understanding of how the book did or the book's reaction? Have you heard it? You know, have you
the folks at Anthology, who are absolutely amazing? They've been so good and so cooperative, and it's been a pleasure to work with them. Casey and Jesse at Anthology have both said that it's been a success. So, you know, I don't know what that means in terms of sales or whatnot. If it's a success to them, I'm sure it's making some sort of money. So
I don't know. This book is really beautiful, and sometimes you don't always get everything together, but the quality, the size, just a beautiful book.
Before it was released, they sent my aunt and I a copy. And I mean, the minute I saw it, I said, I mean, the silver binding, the black pages.
Oh God. I actually have three of them. I've been buying books for a while, and then like I don't know, I would never really sell my books, but a lot of books I bought have got up in value, and I just like to give them away. So I have literally have three. I have two copies. I was going to give them to somebody, and then I didn't see them, so now I have three copies. And I don't think I'll ever sell any of my photography books, but it's nice to be able to give it to somebody if like, you know. And do you, in terms of your own experience, understanding, and you know, have you gotten really to like, I don't know how much he left in terms of like journals, but I'm curious if you have an understanding of who his influences were. I mean, I have some ideas based on, but I'm curious if you just through, you know, if I don't know if there's journals, whatever, or your understanding of where, who were some of the photographers or some of the work that might have influenced him, if you're aware of that.
He did have a ton of journals. I don't have them. My aunt has held on to those. I think, you know, they're pretty private. And so, you know, I know that Cartier-Bresson was one of his huge influences. I'm trying to remember the other. Levinston was another one. My uncle had a chance. There's a quote in one of the articles from my aunt. My uncle had a chance to meet him before he passed away. And they talked about vintage prints and how vintage prints are so popular right now. And he looked at Pat and said, let's make vintage prints. And he took a bunch of his prints, put them on the ground and started stomping on them and said, come join me. Prints. And so, you know, I guess the two of them had a great time that day, you know, and unfortunately that was right before he passed, Mr. Levinston passed away. But my uncle, he loved photographers. He's got his own stack of photography books, just like I'm sure you have. Winograd was another one.
I imagine Winograd, and also, I don't know, Ouija, I might pronounce that wrong. I don't know if that he was an influence or not. It seemed like both of those would make sense as influences for him.
Helen Levitt, is that one? Helen Levitt was another one. It's interesting to me, now that I'm involved with it, and I'm on Instagram, and I'm seeing all of these young street photographers that I've begun to follow on Instagram, and a couple have messaged me and like, oh, you know, we love Pat's work. He's one of the reasons we do this. And, you know, I'll screenshot those and send them to my aunt. And she said, you know, I wish he could have known, because he'd always felt like he wasn't respected as a photographer. Like his work, he always felt like he didn't have that that recognition amongst other artists. And so I wish he'd known that, you know, his work would be lauded like it is now.
He seemed to have he seemed very giving. He seemed like he really wanted to make a difference in people's lives and do really good stuff. Did he have other heroes just in the world that influenced him as a person that you're aware of?
I mean, he was big into family. You know, I mean, him and my grandpa were close. You know, it's one of those memories of when Pat would leave to go back to New York from Chicago. That's the only time you ever saw my grandfather cry, was when Patty would leave, you know? No, I mean, he was big into family. He was proud. He was a proud person. You know, he was very independent. You know, I think that's kind of the role of a freelancer, I suppose, you know, and he, a very independent person, and he had his friendships. He had a lot of friends from growing up that he still talked to, from growing up in Chicago. But yeah, he was an independent type of guy.
I guess it's fair. I want to figure out what his hobbies are, but I feel like probably photography was, I mean, family and photography seemed to be into it.
Well, he did have hobbies. He was always kind of busy with his hands, so he liked to, you know, he was an avid motorcycle rider later in life, and he was very much a painter. After he started to get sick and couldn't do as much, you know, shooting on assignment, just from hauling the equipment and stuff like that, he began to paint a lot more in his studio. And so up in the barn, we didn't even touch them when we were there, but there's probably 200 paintings of his that are 4 feet by 6 feet. And what he would do is he would use his photographs as a centerpiece for his paintings and basically collage around it. So a lot of times, whether it was street photography or it was his photos of flowers. I love his flower series. He's got a moon series of the moon that he photographed in different phases. It's beautiful work, but you know, the issue again is what do we do with it? You know, I mean, it's so large that moving it is going to be a problem. And painting wasn't what he was known for. His photography was what he was known for. So it's one of those things that is a question for another day, probably. But for now, it's sitting in New York, and you know, like I said, some of it's beautiful. I just I don't know what to do with it.
I guess I'm just curious on in all the, you know, and all the going through all this stuff. I'm just curious on some images that you found that really blew you away.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think both early Chicago, Italy, his European stuff, it was, you know, it was as he was in college or just finished college and he wasn't as experienced. And it just seems more just raw and personal. And it's beautiful. I mean, I've posted some of it. You know, I posted a few pictures a few days ago from Italy that were two or three pictures of people on mopeds or motorcycles or something. And it's so good. And it blows me away at how good he was as a photographer back before he was, you know, experienced as a street photographer. And so, you know, I love the Hot Rod and Custom series. I think his ability to capture the faces of the people at that show and, you know, the inquisitive nature of people as they look at the cars. And I think that's my favorite series. I would love for somebody to do a book just of that series, because I think it's absolutely some of his best work.
Do you know, are you aware at all of like how he found photography? How he
didn't start with photography. He went to Southern Illinois University first and left there. And he ended up at Columbia College in Chicago on a scholarship for photography and graduated with honors from Columbia. I feel like I actually read something from my aunt talking about how he got into photography, but I can't recall exactly what the trigger was for him to get into photography. But if I recall, it wasn't really his first love. I mean, he had some other things first. So
there's a quote in one of the articles that Carrie says about that he really knew a lot of people that were all mixed, like Italian, Mexican, Irish, Polish, Jewish, Yugoslavian. What was it about him that could, you know, be an Italian white guy walking into a primarily black skating rink and just get along? What was it about who he was that he's able to get along with all kinds of people? Was that a working class thing? Was that just his personality?
I think a little bit of both. I mean, he was very much working class. I mean, he was, you know, kind of non-assuming. He didn't come across as pompous or arrogant or anything like that. He was kind of an open book. He would tell like it was sometimes, to both a positive and negative. But, you know, he had a connection with the working class. He was from the working class. My grandfather owned a small store in Chicago and was a milkman. You know, they didn't come from a ton of money, had that working class background. And I think that was his catalyst of being able to connect with people, as he understood the plight of the working person.
There's so few people that got known during their life that, I don't know. It's a shame. All I know is, as a photographer, people tell you that they like what you're doing. So I feel like maybe if he had some trepidation or some doubt, I'm sure people over the years told. I mean, you know, there's a I don't know. I feel like artists as people and actors, to a certain extent, wouldn't be doing this if they didn't need a certain amount of attention. And I wonder if, to a certain extent, if that means you don't always take it in. So I wonder if maybe might have been a problem of just him just being very humble and not, you know, but I have to imagine people saw his work and told him how amazing it was all the time, because, you know, his work is very stellar. I mean, it's very, it's really hard. I mean, I look at his work as art, and it's really hard to make art from people on the street that are not posed, that are not, it's not planned. It's just looking around. I mean, it's also just like, you know, I mean, I did document photography, and it's like, you might spend 5 hours walking around and you get one good photo. It's a lot of walking. It's a lot of interacting. It's funny, because like, there's different approaches that people have, different documentary photographers have. And it seems like he got to know people more than other people. If some photographers, you can tell, don't like to connect deeply. They'll just take a picture, thank you. But it seemed like he connected more with people. Do you think that's true in what you've learned about him, in terms of like, would he be the kind of person that would just take a photo and walk around, or would he sit down with people, get to know them a little bit? What do you think? Kind of,
you know, in talking to my aunt again, I, you know, whenever we went to visit him, his camera was next to him. I mean, it was always there, whether, you know, it was always there. And, you know, in talking to my aunt, I think it was more, he would notice something and as quick as he could. You know, the camera was up to his eye. He took the picture and it was down, and he went on his way. I think that's kind of what made him, what makes his photos interesting, is that he does capture, you know, the dignity of people in that brief instant, even without talking to them sometimes, you know, or ever. I mean, I don't know that he ever really talked to many of his the people he photographed, but he was able to capture just that one moment in time and make something beautiful out of it.
I know that he was part of the National Guard. I guess he was involved with the Democratic National Convention protests. I mean, as a do you know if he shot anything during that? Do you know what effect that might have had on him as a person?
I don't believe I think he was working it more so than he was.
I guess he wasn't, right. He wasn't. I'm just assuming he also has a camera, but you're a National Guard. Unless that was his job for the National Guard. Right. But did that have an, do you know if that had an effect on him as a person?
Yeah, it did. I mean, you know, I know we kind of mentioned last time we talked, but the two things I didn't talk about with Pat were politics and religion, because he did have some viewpoints on those. And, you know, it's interesting looking at some of his convention material. You know, he photographed both the Democratic and the Republican national conventions for CBS beginning in 1988. And in one of his prints, in one of the, there's a box of convention prints, and he talks about politics and he calls it the political take. And he talks about the word take and how politics takes from everybody, his view towards politics and how dirty and how, you know, just, you know, I guess undignified politics was. And I guess that was always something that he felt strongly about, was that he did not like politics. Even though he spent a lot of his career photographing politics, he did not like politics.
Do you feel like you, and maybe looking through some of the stuff he did he ever kind of get more into his own art or his own politics while shooting other things? Or are there moments where you feel like, oh, this is like more like his street photography, where it's more real than what he was maybe producing for the company he was working for? I'm wondering how much he kind of did his own work within that. If you found that with like some of the stuff you're finding going through, if you've.
Yeah, absolutely. I think about some of the convention material, and, you know, there's some of the pictures that have to be taken, you know, whether it's of, you know, he's got a picture of Bo Derek with George H.W. Bush, you know, that's a photo that needs to be taken. There's photos of the CBS talent like Dan Rather and Ed Bradley and Mike Wallace, Connie Chung. But then there's also intermingled, there's photos of the participants at these conventions, and it's dressed like Uncle Sam, or it's a woman with red, white, and blue sunglasses and a red, white, and blue top hat. And you could tell that that's a little bit of Pat. Like, that's Pat capturing the essence of the convention rather than capturing the stars of the convention. This is him, capturing
the real.
Yeah.
Do you think he would have identified himself as a documentary photographer?
Good question. I don't know. I don't know how he would have described himself, to be honest. I think, you know, street photography was his passion, and so he would probably identify as a street photographer, and
yeah,
probably as a photojournalist, because, you know, he captured a lot of important events. Going through a lot of his archives, he and I talked about this actually before he died. So their apartment, or near Washington Square Park in Manhattan, they've lived there since they got married. So they've lived there for 50 years almost. Where the apartment is a direct line of sight to the World Trade Center. After the towers were hit, the first tower was hit, his landlord, who knew he was a photographer, pounded on his door and said, "Get up to the roof." And so he took photos of the World Trade Center. And, you know, there's a hand, more than a handful. There's some photos of the World Trade Center incident. And he and I talked about it, and he said, he's like, I don't want to do anything with those. They're here. They're not going to be, you know, there's prints of them, small prints, you know, 4x6 or 5x7, but they're not, you know, he doesn't want anything done with those. And so, you know, he did capture some important moments, that's for sure. But yeah, I think, you know, he would probably call himself a street photographer who had a job as a photojournalist.
One thing I got a lot of information when I did research from I guess an article that Miss Rosen had written for him. She's done a lot. I'm actually going to interview her at some point. She's almost every one of my favorite photographers. She's like written about or put a book out with or, you know, done some work. And somewhere in the article, it was like she talked about him being shy, kind of something we said before, like feeling misunderstood, trying to find its way, maybe couldn't relate to people sometimes, but that photography gave him an opportunity to connect, confront, you know, to be in these places. And I mean, I found that experience too in like my own work, but also in just in interviewing like photographers. A lot of them are shy as hell, but not with their cameras. What do you think about, you know, how have you understood that?
I think that fits Pat perfectly. I think, again, he was, I don't know if shy is the word, he was independent, you know, and he wanted to make his own way in life. And so I think he wanted, like I said, he wanted to do something that made a difference and was recognized. And so, you know, that's kind of my ultimate goal here, is to let his work be seen and, you know, let people that'll appreciate it see it.
What would you say in terms of knowing him as a kid or whenever, like, his powers of observation would be? How do you know him as an observer?
Great. I, you know, again, it was exactly what you described. I mean, I remember when we'd be walking in New York City, he'd have his camera, and then he'd see something and you'd hear click, click, and then it was down. And, you know, it's funny to me now, because I would love to know, now that I have possession of these photos, I'd love to be able to remember, like, oh, that was that moment that he captured when we were standing there, you know. And but yeah, he was observant. He, you know, just going through his photos and seeing the stuff that he captured, it's amazing to me. I mean, from a doorman stacking chairs, or, you know, movers moving an object into a building and the struggle on their faces as they do it, and you know, all the little minute details that make the world that he was able to capture is what blows my mind.
Did you find yourself in some of these photos? Did you find other family? Did he spend a lot of time documenting family?
So, it's funny you say that, because I do remember him taking a ton of photos, but I haven't really come across a lot of photos. And I think a lot is the volume. I mean, When I went through the prints, I found some photos of one of my cousins and his brother, who passed away in 2021, I believe. And I mailed those to my cousin and said, hey, I have no use for pictures of you or your dad, but I'm sure you would love them. Excuse me. So, you know, there are family photos, and I'm sure there's more. I haven't had the time to go through each individual contact sheet and then try to find the negative and pull them. But, you know, I've come across a ton of my aunt, that, you know, she was his muse. You know, she's in I have a large container of slides here that are all my aunt. And so I've got a ton of pictures of my aunt. But again, he always took photos. You know, we always used to joke that we never saw him, as, you know, as we were growing up, like, Pat, print the photos, you know.
There's something in that same article that Miss Rosen wrote, and there's a quote that it's from Pat, apparently his writings. It says, to me, nothing ends, everything continues. I can't see a hard line between winter and spring, nor can I see it between one image and another. It kind of speaks to you before about talking about how just take a picture and then move on. I'm curious how you think that quote really sums up your uncle.
I think it does. It sums him up in terms of, you know, the way he lived. You know, like I said, he was a proud person. You know, he had his opinions and he stood by his opinions. Just, you know, he was steadfast in those opinions. Sometimes I would describe him as stubborn, sometimes, for sure. You know, there was many a family argument over this or that, you know, and there was always some little jokes about it. But, you know, never have yourself went out at the dinner table, by the way. But he was a proud person who, like I said, he just kind of made his own way, and in the process found photography to be a way to connect with the human element.
Do you know what he shot with?
Leica. Always shot with a Leica.
Always shot with Leica. Always film.
He went digital late. I don't remember when he transitioned to digital. And I asked my aunt, because I haven't come across, you know, I thought I'd find maybe, you know, either, you know, like memory cards or something. I haven't really come across any of his digital work. I have some of it on a hard drive. I don't know if last time we talked if I'd received the hard drive yet, but my aunt sent me a hard drive. I think I had, but and it has about 200,000 images on it, plus a lot of, you know, some of his writings, some of his fine art. You know, that's a lot of times where I'll borrow from for Instagram or for his website.
We'll call it in a few minutes. I'm just curious on, I know you are saying like you're not really sure what's going to happen with this stuff, but I am just curious on just in, you know, in your transition from like not being sure what to do with this, getting more involved. What do you think? What would you like to do with it? What would you like to happen with the work? What do you feel like the best way to show a tribute to him, and what are some of your plans involved with it, even if they're, you know, even if they're just like thoughts in this moment?
So I know we talked a little bit before, but so the Dolph Briscoe Center for American History at University of Texas at Austin, so they began they started the Patrick D. Pagano Photographic Archive. And so a lot of his commercial work has already been sent to the Briscoe Center. All of his convention material, a lot of his CBS news material, his Letterman stuff, has been sent to the Briscoe Center and is in the process of being cataloged there.
Was he? I thought he was involved with them before he passed, correct?
No, that was all me. That was
Okay, I'm sorry. I thought that. No. Okay, that's cool.
we were trying to find a place when my aunt kind of made the decision that it was time to start moving his archive to me. We were trying to find the best option to host it where Pat's work will be seen, because that was our goal. You know, it's been sitting in this barn for 5 years, and it's not, you know, why do we take photographs? So we can look at them, right? Not just to sit on them. So I researched some museums, and Dan Rather was a friend of Pat's. They did a lot of work together, and so the Briscoe Center has an exhibit on Dan Rather. And so I reached out to them and said, hey, you know, maybe you'd be interested in some of Pat's material because of the connection with Dan Rather. And the director of special projects reached out to me and said, you know, I looked over some of Pat's material and I think it's a fit. And so they've been very gracious in taking his commercial work, but they're also interested in his street work because they understand it as you know, basically a time capsule. We haven't sent much, if any, street work yet. That's more of his personal stuff, and I've been focusing more on getting the commercial stuff to them. But when you ask about my goals, I mean, like I said, I would love another book. I would love a book of Hot Rod and Custom or his early Chicago. I think it's beautiful work. You know, I don't know. I really don't. We have a lot of prints. You know, at some point, maybe we'll put some of the prints on his website for sale and see if there's any, you know, work that any interest in them. You know, when we were going through the prints, I had my sister and my mom come over, and they each took, you know, a decent number of prints that they said, you know, okay, we can hang these up at our house, or, you know, we'll put them in a portfolio and save them. And you know, and we all said, you know, his work, it lends itself to a book more than prints, I think. You know, again, I don't really know what to expect. And stuff just randomly comes up. Like today I was contacted by a producer who is helping Connie Chung with her autobiography. Do you have images of Connie Chung? Yes, I do. So, you know, that's, you know, his images will probably be in a book. You know, I think I'm going to take things as they come. Right now, his archive is sitting in storage, you know, 5 minutes from my house. And, you know, I try to go there once a week or so and go through prints, or I go and, you know, we have some cases of shot on the street there. So if books sell, I go there and pick them up. And I'm loving it now myself, just looking through it all. And we'll see where it goes. I reached out to a couple of galleries here near Chicago and said, hey, I've got all of this material. Is there any interest in doing a gallery show? You know, of whether it's Hot Rod and Custom or it's Empire Roller Disco or it's early Chicago. And, you know, a couple have responded, and we'll just kind of see where it goes.
I mean, when you're with the work, do you feel a sense of Pat?
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah. You know, and it's funny because my aunt and I talk about it, because sometimes it's frustrating. Because it's like, Pat, what am I going to do with all this stuff, you know? And my aunt says the same thing. And but again, it's holding his passion. It's, you know, he was a passionate person. He was passionate about his work. He was proud of it. He was so immensely proud of his work. You know, when we talk about Shot in the Street, the book, his first book that came out originally in 2002.
Right. And you guys self-published that, right?
Yeah, so he self it's all of his photos, and my aunt helped him with the layout. Because that's She's a freelance graphic designer, and so she knows that world pretty well. And yeah, it's a gorgeous book, and he was so proud. I remember him bringing it to us in Chicago, and the joy that he had, and the fact that he made that. And so, that's my goal, is to get his work out there, and let the world see what an artist he was in terms of photography.
I've done some sports photography, and every once in a while I'll do a shot, and it's just like two people dancing. Yet it's like I shoot wrestlers sometimes, and you'll get a certain shot because it's kind of frozen, where there's a beauty and a poetry to it, and it's like it's kind of magic, and you don't expect it.
I would completely agree, and I think that's a lot of what's captured. The freedom, I think, is the thing that I notice the most. It's the freedom of movement, freedom of being yourself was the main thing with Empire.
And can you just plug the website? Can you plug your Instagram? Let people know where they can, find out about this stuff, keep tabs on it, where they can get the but they want to order the other book, where they can get that, or both books.
PatrickDPagnano.com is the website, and Instagram is at Patrick_D_Pagnano_photography. So, a lot of everything that's posted on his Instagram gets forwarded to his website. So feel free to go on his homepage of his website, and you can access his Instagram from there. The book is available there. There is free shipping on all of the books. And so, again, our goal is to let his work be seen, let people appreciate the brilliance of Patrick Pagnano.
Hey, I'm just gonna end this a little differently. A lot of my, I don't know, I was gonna say success and all this. I don't know how to define success. This has been the most successful I've been. I don't make any money at all, so who knows what success is, but I don't know. This sell thing has changed my life in such a positive way, and I can only measure that for now. And the people I've gotten to talk to and the people I've gotten to meet, it's bigger than any dream I've ever had. And I couldn't have planned any of it, and I don't want to plan any of it. It's hard to figure out what's going to happen next, because really, I just followed opportunity. And what I'm trying to do now with the podcast is really just be a little more open about who I am. I don't know where I'm on the spectrum, but I know I'm there. I've known that for a long time. I work as a teacher in special ed. It's been very clear, made much more clear working with certain populations of folks on the neurodiversity. For 30 years. And I'm just trying to really do more around that. So we put a call out a few months ago to do a guide, a very, basic guide for people coming from people who are neurodiverse and how to deal with things and offer to those other people. And we're working on that. And through that kind of stuff, another opportunity just came up, which I'm not going to announce yet, but we're working on a kind of another longer podcast series. It might be 6, 7 episodes, tied around neurodiversity, and I'm really excited. I can't say more, but we will be putting out an episode, preferably really soon. And if you're looking for some inspiration around neurodiversity, I know it's hard. This next project will, I think, appease you. And we're still going to work on the project I'm not talking about, but we're still working on this guide, which will be put out over a period of time. We're just trying to really help other people. I mean, the whole idea of this podcast, this project, it's bigger than an Instagram page. It's a whole project. It's educational in nature. I've wanted to put something out there to help people, especially on the spectrum, I mean, I don't know how to put this, but there's loneliness in there. You always feel a bit on the outside, even if you have friends, even if things are cool. It's hard, and sometimes it's really hard as a kid. It's really hard as a teen, and some of those things don't always go away. I'm very happy in my life, and I've dealt with what I've had to deal with to be operational. But I can tell you, it's hard sometimes, and I just wanted to do something really to make it less hard. For me, hearing other people's stories, having some of the other people talk to you about this, it's helpful, and that's where we're at. So, and in all this, I always will ask for support. If you have any real money. I lose money every, I teach, so you know, I make money, but it's not really enough to keep funding the podcast. So if you believe in the work and you have some serious money, we're doing some great stuff. We have some huge plans. We need money. We need producers. We need people that see the vision and can fund it. That's simple. We're not trying to make money at this thing. I'm just not trying to lose any more money because I can't. I don't really have it to lose. That being said, everything I've paid out, I'm very happy to, because this is the best opportunity of my life. But at some point, it's going to be hard. So if you want to support us or share the podcast, it would be very helpful. Thank you.
We thought in different ways. Look around. Thank you.